This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. On my end, I'm Michael W. Dean. On the other end, in the backwoods of Maine, crawling inside of a... Phil Warmoth had to cut open a moose for warmth. Oh, wait, it's summer. No, that's a few months off. That's a month off before you're cutting open moose for warmth. How you doing, Phil Warmoth? What's up?
I'm doing great. I got to tell you, man, JIT Production Studios is not toxic anymore. Yesterday,
what does that mean?
We had a it was terrible.
Are you out in the shed or are you in the basement?
No, I'm in the bunker. Yeah, okay. I'm in the bunker. Okay. We had to have an old oil tank removed. The fumes were so bad. We could barely be in the house.
What were the fumes in it? Like clear just now. Old oil?
Yeah, old oil, and actually the oil had congealed at the bottom of the tank, and they had a really hard time getting it out. I had to help them out.
Wow.
But we're all good. We're clean now. We're burning clean now.
What are you burning?
On propane. Moose? Propane.
Propane and propane accessories?
Yes. Yes, very much so. Yeah, and so it's pretty cool. I got a painting job where I can swap out my labor for a generator. So JIT Production Studios will never be down now.
Yep, wow.
We'll always be...
You know,
if
this was back when we knew each other in college, my first comment of you owning a generator would be like, let's get a PA and go. We could just go anywhere and do a poetry reading.
Right. Yeah. And we kind of did that without a generator.
We did.
Right.
Yeah. We just stand on the street corner and yell. You know, I never finished a story on the last time we were on, and I realized it while cutting it up to put in our new record, which I should put in a plug for, the new Biptunia record, which is almost a Freedom Fiends episode. And if there's anybody who got upset because I actually put it on the feed so it auto-downloaded people who are subscribed for the Freedom Fiends, I apologize. But it basically was a Freedom Fiends episode because it had Freedom Fiends of us talking chopped up and turned into music, which was kind of cool because I heard it the other day on the radio because we're on the radio in the town here.
Nice.
In Wyoming. And I heard it and I was like, it was weird because I'd hear you say things that are in the record and I'd be like, where's the music? You know, because I've heard the music so often while mixing it. But the story I didn't finish was I was talking about Doug Brunskill, the guy that played bass in our band, The Armless Children, in 1981, 82, maybe?
81, 82. Yeah, I think it, yeah.
And he was working in Chautauqua. You know, I don't think we knew you were working in Chautauqua. I think we were across town in the same 1 mile by 1 mile place. And like,
that wouldn't surprise me.
We could have been hanging out with you. We could have come down and done a concert for the kids where you were working at the Boys
cool.
and Girls Club.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was... So the thing I didn't finish saying was that Doug and I... Maybe I did say this, but he and I used to do impromptu concerts. Like, we would pack a guitar amp and a bass amp and a microphone. We'd, like, sing through the same amp we're playing guitar through, which never sounds good. And we'd just drive his Suburban or whatever it was back then to just anywhere, to a park. And we'd scout around and we'd find, like, the outdoor outlet, you know, and we'd just plug in.
Right,
with
the
one with a 100-foot cord going across a road that doesn't have much traffic. And we'd just set up and play, you know, Interstellar Overdrive and Astronomy Domine by Pink Floyd. Yeah. Maybe I said that story, but I don't know. But that's
You didn't finish that part.
Okay, well that's the finish.
That makes me. So I was doing without in a parallel universe. I was doing the same thing, but with poetry. I would go. I attend all these formal poetry readings, and then as soon as the last person left the podium, I just jumped up there and let them have it. And that's it was kind of like guerrilla poetry, you know. But surprisingly, people dug it, but I had to keep my poems really short. So that's, I got a lot of criticism later because my poems were really short and I had to,
that's a good thing.
It was like a hit and run.
It's a good hit and run.
You know, you got to give them a gut punch and then you leave and then they're still wondering what happened.
Yeah. It's always better to leave them wanting more than to leave them going, ugh, I wish he'd stopped five minutes ago, you know? And yeah, I think a lot of people are like that with poetry. And you have a very unique delivery with your poetry. It's not like most people, when they do poetry, they use this timbre that is lifted directly from the beats, but they don't know it. They're only imitating other people they've heard do poetry, like jazz, man, you know? And it's really corny. Like aren't half the people at open mics doing that thing?
Yeah. It's old. It's been done. It's over.
Yeah.
Like, find your own voice.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's
people out there, find your own voice.
And they're imitating Kerouac. That's Kerouac's thing, isn't it?
Right. And it was his thing without him even realizing.
Yeah. And I think there was, I think there's actually an ad. I think it's for jeans or something. That's a total ripoff of that. It's like, you know, kind of dapper looking man, you know, supposed to be Kerouac. It's like, you know, kind of looks like a movie star, but who's a drug addict, you know, Kerouac, in a suit jacket, kind of like our Open Knife Night record cover, in a suit jacket on a stage with a microphone with a jazz combo quietly playing behind him. And he's doing that form of delivery, which is influenced by scat singing in jazz. And probably exists because he probably did that at some point. And there's probably film of him doing it. But there's a jeans commercial that's like, you know, ode to my 501 jeans or something. It's really sad to me. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, even he became a caricature of himself. You know, as soon as you could buy a tie-dye shirt in the store, man, it was a caricature of the hippie generation.
Yeah.
I think we talked about that.
That stuff's all funny to me too. Like, especially punk rock. Like I was there back in the day, you know, I played in a hardcore punk rock band in Washington, D.C. in 1984. And then played in one in 1985 that put out a record that, you know, got a lot of play around the country and people really liked it. The Beef People mm-hmm. was the band. And the band in D.C. wasn't really a hardcore band, but it was a punk band that played some hardcore. It was called The Day I Lost My Virginity was the name of the band. And it was later called mm-hmm. Michael, which I didn't change it. The woman who played bass, Peggy Tully, who's still my friend, and I introduced her to her husband, and I'm happy about that. Like, set him up. Like, oh, you guys should meet. I think you'd get along. Even though he was in Seattle and she was in San Diego at the time. And they're still together and they're happy and it's all good. So, cool. So I was doing it, like, when I was doing it in 85, you know, I was one of probably 1,000 bands making music that sounded like that. And we were probably in the top 50 as far as how good we were. We weren't that popular, but we were really, really good. And now there are probably, you know, 10,000 bands that sound exactly like I sounded when I was sounding like 1,000 other bands in 1985. Like, that kind of thing's grown, and there's still people doing that to the point where, you know, like, I'm on this punk rock, I'm an admin on this punk rock group on the internet, which is, it's a cool group, but it's got like 190,000 followers. So I post something on there, and it gets a lot of comments and a lot of, you know, click-through traffic. It's one of the reasons that the Biptunia site has a lot more traffic than other sites that we do. Because I occasionally, when we do a new record, I post it on there. But it's funny on there because, like, you know, every time I post something on there, like, we'll get about 1,000 hits on the website, on the site, and we'll get about 200 downloads or whatever I'm uploading. But then I'll get like 3 or 4 comments of like, ugh, synthesizers, that's so stupid. And then I'll go look at the people, like, what they like on the internet, you know, look at their page on Facebook or wherever, mm-hmm. Face Beef. And it's like, they like bands, either they like bands from 1985, hardcore punk rock bands, or they like bands that are current that sound exactly like hardcore bands from 1985. And I'm just, ugh, man. I mean, and I made a meme about it, and it really ruffled a lot of feathers, and it said, punk rock is the new dad rock. Because, you know, dad rock's the phrase for, like, oh, you know, Queen and Journey and Boston and, Grand Funk Railroad, if you want to go to Granddad Rock. But yeah, punk rock is dad rock. I mean, I'm 54. I was younger than the people playing in the bands in DC. Like, a lot of the bands, the better known bands, were like, you know, those guys are, you know, 56, 57 now. That's grandpa age, man. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all.
So that's a great segue. So I sent you an email this morning in reaction to a funny.
I don't know what I sent you.
Me.
You said cool.
Oh,
but
it was hilarious.
Well,
that was
8 hours ago. I have no idea what I said 8 hours ago.
There was a scene in this diner, and there's all these old timers.
Yeah. No, it's not a diner. It's an old folks' home. It's an old folks' home with a bunch of old men arguing. And the nurse laughing at them, and somebody put captions over each of their, like, what they're saying, and what are they arguing about?
Yeah, which granddaddy band is the best, man.
It's like AC/DC.
Like, yeah, one guy with the Clash.
The Clash, the one guy.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking of updating that and just replacing them with names of old punk rock bands and posting it on that punk rock thing, but I'll probably get kicked off because people will get their feels hurt. You hurt my feels. Yeah.
Well, if you, yeah, I don't get it, man.
I don't get it. A lot of people don't have a sense of humor about what they do. If you can't laugh at what you do, like we, that's one reason I like our band Biptunia is we laugh at least with what we're doing as we're doing it. It's like kind of dark music with serious lyrics, but sometimes lyrics are funny. I like that.
Yeah.
I like.
I do too.
I believe. I believe like, us.
I believe in us.
I believe us. Let's talk about the new record. It's a new record out. It's called Fanfare for the Common Worm, which features the song Fanfare for the Common Worm, which I just mentioned the concept, which is based on a neoclassical piece from 1947 called Fanfare for the Common Man. It's a, you know, horn-based fanfare song that was written by Aaron Copland and was famously redone by Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. They played it at the Winter Olympics opening in 1970-something. Did you see the footage of them on YouTube playing it, like soundcheck?
Yeah, I did.
In a, it, like freezing in an
bitter
outdoor.
Cold, yeah.
Yeah, they're wearing like big fluffy parkas and their hands are, you can see their breath. They're playing it outdoors. Yeah, and think about that too. That was, the soundcheck was in the daytime. So the show, you know, they played just that one
song.
There
was nobody there.
No, yeah, but that was the soundcheck for the evening opening ceremony.
Yeah, if that was the soundcheck, then I can't imagine
how cold it was 8 hours later at night.
Yeah,
in Canada, in Toronto. Yeah.
Right.
Suffering for their art.
Right on.
But so Fanfare for the Common Worm. You actually wrote a song, Fanfare for the Common Worm, that really, we had our friend Kip do the spoken introduction, and it sounds like it literally, I don't like that word, it actually sounds like a 1958 sci-fi movie intro.
And that's exactly what I was going for.
I thought so. I didn't even ask you. But yeah.
Yeah, when you mentioned the concept of the Fanfare for the Common Worm, I thought, all right, that's it. I can connect it. So
yeah.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite songs on the album.
It is,
for sure.
It is. And spoiler alert. Yeah. So mankind destroys itself, and then the worms have a field day.
Yeah.
That's the plot of that song. I thought that was an interesting twist. I liked it.
Well, and there's also the other twist where the aliens actually commissioned the worms to take over and do their bidding for them. So that there's a whole nother twist to that. But then there's a subtle line that implies that when the worms are done with the humans, their tastes have evolved and they're looking for something a little more exotic.
I thought that the people were the little more exotic.
No, the aliens are. But take away whatever you want from it.
Oh, I didn't get that. Cool. Wow.
But see, that's the beauty of those kind of lyrics, that you can take away whatever you want from them.
Yeah. So they turned on their masters who compensated them well. Yeah.
Right.
I thought the compensation was just, here's a bunch of food. Here's all the people. Was there a day payment Bitcoin or something? Worm coin?
Yeah, I leave that up to the imagination of the reader and listener.
Credits. Yeah. You know, there's a book by, who are the two really famous movie critics, film, you know, magazine critics?
Oh,
Siskel and Ebert.
Ebert
wrote a book. He didn't actually write it, but it's a collection that he put out that he says he didn't write. He just collected it. And it's things from letters people wrote him back before the internet of, like, you know, he said in the Chicago Tribune in his column, like, hey, send me letters with all of the movie cliches you can think of. And like one of them is called The Fruit Cart. So anytime you have, and you read this book, it's a short book, but it's every one of them. It's like, yes, I've seen that. Yes, I've seen that. Yes, I've seen that. The fruit cart one is that whenever you have a chase scene in a movie and it goes through either an ethnic, how do you say this? An ethnic area in America, like, you know, Little Italy in New York City or somewhere that's not, you know, WASPy, or they're in some other country. There's always a scene where somebody knocks over a fruit cart when they're running and fruit goes everywhere.
You know, I never really thought about that, but that's true.
Yeah, yeah, yep. And
so do we have any fruit carts? Do we have any fruit carts?
Well, there was a fruit cart, and I forgot where we were going. How do we get here?
We're talking about Fanfare for the Common Worm.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was a fruit cart in it, or maybe. I can't think of it.
There must have been a fruit cart in it.
There was a fruit cart in it. Yeah. Oh, another one is whenever there's an explosion, it's always shown from three different angles.
Right.
Yeah. Because, you know, if you're going to blow up a building and spend a lot of money and film it for Hollywood, you might as well rent a couple extra cameras in case one of them fails. But if they don't fail, you have three different boom, boom, boom. So one of the other cliches in Ebert's book is, in any science fiction that takes place in another galaxy and or in the future, the monetary system is always called credits.
Oh, yeah. You pointed that out to me.
Yeah.
And I didn't know where that came from. It sounded weird, but.
Yeah.
Huh. Credits. Yep. Yeah.
You know, Ebert actually gave a very favorable review to a movie I made or to a piece of video I made. It's kind of weird.
Nice. What was it?
When my daughter died of leukemia in 2006, about a year later, I was still dealing with it and kind of trying to get closure on it. And I recorded a song in memory of her, and it was Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen. Do you know the song?
No, I don't.
It's really, really beautiful. Just like, you know, people start weeping. It's that kind of just beautiful song and very poetic. And a lot of people cover it since then. It wasn't that commonly covered back then. I'm not saying I invented it. I mean, Jeff Buckley did it before me, and I was kind of covering Jeff Buckley's cover, but bringing it to my own. And my friend Charlie played pedal steel guitar on it. Charlie from The Landlords and The Happy Flowers played pedal steel on it. It was really beautiful. And I went out in a field and set up a microphone and sang it. My wife filmed it. And I'm actually crying during playing it, like I was singing it. I wasn't intending to do that, but it was very real. And you could see it, you know, in the footage. And I posted it, and I introduced the song with, you know, I'm singing this song in memory of my daughter, Amelia, who died of leukemia about a year ago. And this show a couple pictures of her. And, you know, it's a very solo tinkling minor key guitar kind of thing, but it's real. And it got, you know, I don't know, 100,000 hits or 50,000 views or something. And somebody forwarded it to Ebert. And this is like years later, you know, probably 5 or 6 years ago when he had cancer, when he was dying of a long cancer illness himself, but still writing. And he, you know, he tweeted it and he said, you know, something like, I've never seen anything this touching of, you know, a parent doing something for their child, or not never seen, but this is an extremely touching example. I'm very moved by this. And, you know, I thought that was awesome. It's not on Twitter anymore, but I took a screenshot of it. I have it somewhere. But yeah, it was funny because I make movies and I've sent him copies of the movies. And of course he never reviewed them because he probably gets a million DVDs in the mail. But I thought he would at least review the Selby movie. I mean, that's, you know, that's his kind of thing. But yeah, he gave that 8 thumbs up basically on Twitter, and I was really honored by it, man.
Nice.
Yeah. All right.
An opposable thumb up.
Yep. So I got a couple little news items here. If you got notes, write them down. We'll cover them. I got a couple little things about things that have happened that I wanted to talk about. One was, let's see. So we want to talk about constrained writing, but first I want to talk about a couple things in the news. One, this is kind of funny. One is that there was a guy in Wyoming here who was sentenced. He was sentenced for menacing a bison. Did you hear about this?
Oh yeah, I saw the footage.
You saw the footage? Yeah.
So it's the same one we're talking about.
Well, it's the only one that's been in the news lately. It's a drunk guy at Yellowstone. You know, in Yellowstone National Park in Wyoming, there's always in the summer it's just mad with tourists. It's, you know, it's basically traffic jams, and there's also bison jams where there's just like 50 bison in the road, and people don't mind it. They stop and they get out of their cars and film it. And there's footage that some other guy, you know, some other family did of this guy getting out of his car. He's obviously drunk. He's staggering. And he's basically pretending to bullfight with a bison. And he's like charging at it and then stepping back. And this bison almost kills him. I really was cheering for the bison. I was kind of hoping it would. Yeah. You know, the bison charged at him and then just stopped inches from him. I mean, the bison could have killed him right then.
Oh, easily.
And
yeah.
And they wouldn't have put the bison down or anything. They would have been like, okay, just use this as a cautionary example, people. But yeah, the guy got sentenced to like 18 months, something like that. And I say good. I mean, I'm not all in favor of, there's a law for everything, but I put it this way. I'm not sad that he got time for doing that. It was really crass and really mean and stupid. And although I really think the answer would not be law. I think the answer would be Darwin, you know, just
natural consequences.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, my wife and I went through Yellowstone, and it's exactly what you said. Like sometimes you'll be stuck in a traffic jam and you don't know what it is until it breaks up, and then you see the bison moving on. But you're supposed to stay like 50 feet away from those things. There's plenty of warning. It's not like people don't know.
Oh, yeah. About once a year, you know, somebody gets gored by one. And it's often they're not being that stupid. You know, they're not being aggressive toward it. They're trying to feed it Doritos or something. And it's just,
right.
Yeah. Or a bear, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We camped out one night there and the bear were, there were warnings.
When
yeah.
were you here? Was I here? You should have stopped.
Nah. Well, you were you there in 1990?
No.
I don't think you were. Were you?
No. No. I was doing drugs and being a low rent rock star in San Francisco in 1990.
Right.
I was dating seven women. Yeah. And you know, the thing about dating seven women is it ain't seven times the fun. It's seven times the hassle. And one of them always feels like killing you.
That came right off the album.
That's from the album. It's true, though. But
yeah. Yeah.
You know, speaking of the album, there's this new synthesizer that I made, this new VST synth called Lita and the Kitties. Google that. It'll make sense. Or don't. But she likes the kitties. They're her friends. It's not like the swan. So this soft synth I make. There's people going, what are you talking about? You make synthesizer? Yeah, it's software synthesizer that I made, VST plugin, for the next album. And I'll release it to the public when it's done. But it's pretty cool. I sent you a recording of it today. Do you like it?
Yeah, it's actually, I have it. The file right on my desktop. Yeah, I do. That kind of has a little sci-fi feel to it. I dig it, man.
I wanted to call it Bleep Bloop. I thought that'd be a good name for it. Bleep Bloop. Right. But I found out there's a really popular band called Bleep Bloop, and it would be confusing. But, you know, it is a very Bleep
More
Bloop.
Power to them.
You know, it's a very R2-D2.
That's great, though.
Maybe I should call it R3-D3. Right. But I like Lita and the Kitties. So Lita and the Kitties, one of the settings in it, you know, I used to make a bunch of presets in the synth. Like, people can still adjust all the controls on it, but it's good to make presets so people can just start with what you have and expand from there, or just use the presets. I use presets almost exclusively on all the Biptunia stuff. And there's some people who think that's cheating and they don't want to sound like other people. But the thing is, I have like 55 or 60 different synthesizers that each have between, you know, 8 and 128 presets. And, you know, using 6 or 7 of those in combination in the same song, plus playing, we're getting a caller, plus playing how I play, you know, it's not going to sound like anybody else. But presets. A lot of people would rather monkey around with the gear and, you know, they spend hours on the internet talking about the gear and the settings, and they're like, I would never use a preset. And I'm like, let me hear your music. And they're like, well, I don't have any yet. Or, you know, they give you the music and it just sounds boring and repetitive, and it still sounds like everyone else, even though they used, you know, $30,000 worth of Euro rack hardware modular synthesizers to make it that they've spent 10 years building up. And today, well, it's after midnight now, so not today, but today is the 1 year anniversary of when I started Biptunia, and you joined a few months later, and we have 7 albums out, and they're great, and they're long. It's really like 10 albums if you went by vinyl album length.
Right.
But one of the presets on this is called Kitty's Gotta Eat.
Oh, yeah. That's a story.
Yeah, which, you know, Jamie from Vantana Row, I think I'm required by my own law now to mention them once a show.
Sure, why not?
Because I am managing them, and they're interesting. It's our friends that live in a van, married couple, a band, a rock band of 2 people that play one-minute drive-by shows. They just pull up to where there's a bunch of people waiting for another band and play drums and play recordings and scream out the side of the van and then throw CDs and then drive off. But
kind of like what we were doing, right?
Kind of like what we were doing, but more automated.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would take time to set up, but yeah, and then we didn't have a getaway vehicle. That makes it better.
That's true. That's true.
But Jamie really liked the album, and he said, and he actually like listened to a rough cut of it and said, change these 2 things. It was kind of like overloaded my speak, you know, just technical stuff like this overloaded the speakers. And I actually put a lot more bass on this record and more high end. Like, the other records were kind of all mid range, but they're still very listenable. But this one sounds really good. It even sounds good on a phone. Like, that's a test of if it's a good mix, you know, if it sounds good on a stereo or on a phone, like through the phone speakers.
Right.
But yeah, man, your record, this is kind of these are dark lyrics. And I'm like, this is like a guy who screams and lives in a van and says, our lyrics are dark. I like that, you know? Yeah.
I do too. And they're dark, but they're, they're dark, but they're like wormhole dark.
Yeah.
You know, like they'll suck you in. But there's always that little element of humor and sarcasm
and hubris.
Yes. Just a pinch.
Hubris.
A pinch of hubris. A pinch of hubris, please.
keeps reality at bay. Hubris is always followed by the, what is it? Hubris is followed by the fall. Isn't that a saying?
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
So do you have something else to say? I'm sure you got some things to say.
I forgot what I was going to say. I forgot. I had a thread there, but I lost it. Yeah.
Hey, Grandpa, what's that?
Yeah.
What's that you got? Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
So yeah. I always follow your sage advice when listening to a new album. So I'll listen to it on some good speakers. I'll listen to it on some good headphones.
Oh, on our records. Yeah.
Yeah. And so yesterday.
But you got to listen to it on your phone, like a crappy speaker. At least listen to it.
Well, that's where I was going with it. Yeah. Okay. So yesterday I listened to it on my phone. Had some trouble holding it. But it was because of in Maine, it's really tough. The computer access is very limited. And if
you mean the internet,
two people around the internet's there should be more than one because the one that we have here isn't working so well.
Yeah.
But anyway, I finally downloaded the album and I was really looking forward to listening to it on the phone, and the my customers weren't home. So I cranked it up on my phone and it sounded good, man.
Yeah.
It sounded good. I'm not just saying it.
Well, I remixed it since then, too, because that's just how quick I am. Did you get the remix yesterday?
Yeah, I did. Good. Yeah, that's what I listened to.
Yeah. Yeah. Just very, very tiny changes, but it's better. Like, it was, you know, I kind of rushed it out, but I kind of rush everything out, but I'm very good at doing things in a rush. But the final mix, like, after 2 or 3 days of listening to it, I had, like, 5 or 6 notes of, I should have done this differently. And I was like, you know, I can. So I did.
Right. And I definitely noticed the changes that Jamie suggested in
it didn't vibrate though, you know, it didn't buzz on that one note in that one song before.
Yeah. Yeah, so our collaborators, our fellow
fiends,
satellite, I would say. Yeah,
our farm Victoria team, Fantana Row, the farm team.
There you go. That's what I was
also our street team. I mean, I'm actually like been sending them a lot of those download cards and a lot of stickers. Right. I mean, I've probably sent them $100 worth of stickers and download cards, and they're just plastering San Francisco with them. I mean, I'm not, you know, they don't break any laws, of course. It's only on private property they own, but they own a van. It's got Piptunia stickers on it. And, you know, they're handing them out to people, and they're sticking them in the CDs they throw out to people in the CD cases with the QR code. Yeah, I saw a picture of it.
Yeah.
So they are our street team.
I've been using them, the stickers, as business cards. Yeah, it works really well.
I went to the audiologist the other day, and I handed stickers to 3 different people that worked there. And
nice.
Yeah, and you know, the reaction, I say, hey, this is my music. It's not really loud because, you know, as you know, since you just tested my ears, I have hearing problems. But it's good music, and I like it, and maybe you'll like it. And it's got a cat on it, and I hand them the sticker. And, you know, the reactions cool. range from, okay, to, oh, cool, and to, oh, neat. It's got a kitty. You know, those are the 3 reactions I got that day. So, the good news is I had really good news from the audiologist. So I had a hole drilled in. This is really metal. This is so brutal and metal, man. I had a hole drilled in my eardrum. I mean, this sounds like it'd be on the cover of a heavy metal album from the 70s, like a drill going into someone's ear. I think it might have actually been. But it is. No, there's a Butthole Surfers. Oh, I'm sorry. B-Hole Surfers. I think you can say Butthole Surfers on the radio now. I remember Gibby Haynes.
I think
Haynes
that's why they called themselves that, yeah.
I remember Gibby Haynes from the Butthole Surfers back in the 80s when I used to see him. Like, whenever they'd play somewhere, a lot of times it was censored in the paper, like in the ads for whatever club they were playing. It'd be like the B, asterisk, 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 O-L-E, Surfers. And I remember Gibby Haynes, the singer, saying, you know, if my 78-year-old grandma can say the name of my band, you should be able to print it in the paper.
Good point. Yeah.
Yeah. But they had a record that was a drawing of a person with a pencil stuck in their ear, like pushed in halfway with this like look of shock on their face. I thought that was kind of funny. So I had that done, paid a lot of money, insurance helped, but I had what's called a myringotomy. It's myringotomy, I think. So if you Google that, that's at least close enough of spelling that you're going to get horrible images of the procedure of this happening. And it's not fun, and they basically they do it because there was buildup, fluid buildup in my eardrum that was making me deaf. Like I had about 50% of my hearing a year ago. or 2 years ago when this happened. And it was partially because I played in rock bands forever and have tinnitus and have hearing damage from that. But it's also because I was on prednisone for the smoke from the wildfires here. They're actually really bad right now.
Right.
But I'm doing okay. No. Usually I have this, there's this map. It's called, what is the map that I use? I should give this out. It's a good resource. So if you want, anywhere in America, you can search and see what the current and for the next 24 hours smoke will be in your area, which is really good if you have lung issues or have a loved one that does, or a baby or a grandmother or some guy that smoked 60 pack years of cigarettes like me before I quit. And it's eldoradoweather.com. So like when it's a 4 or 5, which is 4 or 5 micrograms per square meter over a 24-hour, over a 1 hour period, it's weird math, but it's like, so when there's, like if you're in a fire, like if you're in, you know, if you look at the places in California where the town is on fire, like the town near the fire, you know, it'll be 1,000 sometimes and it'll be like 300 most of the time. But that's like, you know, people are dying from that. People are hospitalized from that and people who aren't sick, but I'm sick. So, you know, of a 4 or 5, I notice and I cough. And today it was like 27, which is, you know, like five times, but I'm on prednisone. Not a lot, like 20 milligrams a day tops. And I was on like 60 milligrams a day average for 2 years.
Wow.
And it's a miracle drug, but it has a lot of side effects. You've had to take it before, right? For inflammatory
issues. Yeah, I've had it before.
Yeah. If you have an asthma attack and go in the hospital in the ER and you can't breathe, you know, they'll inject you with this because then you'll instantly be able to breathe. And they don't use it for an EpiPen because it's not quite as, like EpiPens aren't the cure. They're not really the treatment. They're just the keep you from dying treatment, but they wear off in 15 minutes, whereas the prednisone lasts like 8 hours. So if you go in the hospital, basically they'll give you prednisone and then they'll give you nebulizing albuterol. And I have all that at home always. So
yeah, I do too.
Yep.
I got smoke inhalation from a fire in our building one time. Ugh. It's brutal, man. It was rough,
man. Where? Which building? Seattle? The Junkie Hotel.
The Junkie Hotel.
How many dead bodies did you find?
There weren't. Seems like that's a common theme every episode.
Well, you're talking about.
We may even get to that sometime.
I've asked you 3 times, but now you're saying there was a fire. I want to know how many dead bodies you found and which junkie fell asleep. With a cigarette in his hand.
That's exactly what happened.
I know. You didn't have to tell me, but I know. Junkie Hotel, fire. Someone nodded out with a cigarette in their hand.
That's what happened.
And the Junkie Hotel couldn't afford mattresses with fireproofing on them. Or it's, you know, Seattle, so that's illegal because it's not good for your health.
Well, all the apartments had old Murphy beds, so you can imagine those mattresses.
I had one
70 years
in San Francisco.
I did too.
Yeah.
Actually, I gave myself a concussion trying to take one off the door one time.
The guy above me in San Francisco, like I never folded mine out. I just left because it was kind of like the couch in my little apartment too. But the guy above me would just like drop his every night. Like, you know, just tip it and let it crash. I mean, it sounded like the old
springs were gone on the thing. Yeah.
It sounded like it sounded like, you know, a car hitting the building and I lived on the 5th floor. But yeah.
Oh, man. So, yeah, anyway, so the way the building worked was there was a main fire panel in the lobby. So every apartment was hardwired with these really loud. They were horns. They weren't beeping. Yeah. And but people were so incensed because
sound the fanfare.
People would always come home. You know, they'd come home from the clubs late at night. You know, put in a pizza, turn on the oven, and then, you know, burn it, and smoke's filling up their apartment. People just got so used to the alarm going off that they wouldn't leave the building. Well, this time
that's how car alarms are. Like no one ever, you know, they go off false alarms so often that
So apparently the person did what you said. They fell asleep and their mattress caught on fire. And I believe I heard they were actually trying to drag the mattress down the hall while it was on fire. And that didn't work out so well. So I had to run down. I happened to be on duty that day night. I had to run downstairs and look at the fire panel, and the fire panel would light up the floor above, the floor below, and the floor that the actual fire was on. So I figured out it was on the 5th floor, 1 floor up from me. So I touched the door, the hallway door, to make sure it wasn't hot. I opened it up and I couldn't see a thing, man.
Ugh.
I couldn't see. I held my hand up in front of my face, and I couldn't see a thing. And there were 19 apartments on each floor.
Man.
So I'm pounding on people's doors, you know, trying to let them know if, you know, that this thing's for real. And come to find out after the fire, the emergency lights were on, man. That's how toxic it was, because the hallway carpets. Yeah, it was so black that the carpet, the chemicals in the carpet.
Yeah, that was probably a 5,000, you know, on this scale.
That was more. Brutal, yeah. Man.
How long were you harmed from it, and how harmed were you from it?
It was like a month before I started to feel better, and I had to do the nebulizer treatments and all that stuff. And before that, I really didn't even have to use a atomizer, but now I'm still using one, you know. It really does mess you up.
You should have gotten workman's comp for that. And, you know, seriously.
Yeah, man.
It's probably, too late now.
A little late, yeah. But so the next day, I go up and I look, and that whole hallway was just devastated. And the apartment where the fire originated basically was just nothing but a concrete shell. Like, it even burned through the old oak flooring.
With some feet still in the shoes on the bed.
Oh, man. Nah, and that fire just burned so hot. It burned everything.
Did the guy get out?
Appliances. And the guy got out, yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's a miracle. Yeah. But
well, it'd probably been a few hours since his last shot. You know, if he just shot up, he probably would have not made it.
Probably not. No.
Yeah. Man, good times. Yeah. Good times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Glad he got out. So, and that man is now president of the United States.
Still smoking. Still
that
smoking.
That man is now. Oh, I got a funny local story of a few towns over in Casper, Wyoming. Well, it's not a funny story, but it's I don't usually cheer for the cop, as you know. You know, I'm not anti-police. I believe that there do need to be security forces in a given geographic region, but I don't think they should be funded by taxes. I think they could be contracted independently. I think poor people would still be covered because the people who they work for and buy things for would want to protect them because they are a resource. You know, just basic libertarian theory 101. Most policing now does not protect and serve. It basically is revenue generation and perpetuating the benefits in the job. For instance, it's really common in a lot of towns for, you know, the police to, all over America, for the police to go whole hog out to arrest, you know, poor drug users or even people just smoking pot for cancer or whatever. Like, people who choose to do something, put it in their body that doesn't have victims outside themselves, they will go really hard after those people and just mess them up and kick in their doors and throw them on the ground and put guns to their head and drag them off, put them in a cage and ruin their life. And, you know, drugs are dangerous because they can get you killed by the police or put in a cage. But those same towns always invariably have, you know, hundreds or thousands of unprocessed rape kits, you know, like evidence of actual crimes, of brutal crimes against women, that they're just sitting there because they're like, oh, we don't have money for that. But, you know, you have money to kick in people's doors and take their little plants, you know. So I'm not a fan of the current way policing is done in the world, not just America. But there's actually one here where I'm kind of cheering for the police. So but it also involves the state eating its own, which happens whenever there's a government. And I do require myself, you know, once a show to go on a little tirade about politics. So, and really, it's not a tirade about politics. It's a tirade about economics, because all politics boil down to economics. So show me the money, follow the money, where's the money? So in Casper, there was a shooting where a guy shot at the police shot back, killed the guy. What I would, you know, and I generally, when there's a police shooting, I'm like, oh, the police murdered somebody. But in this case, it's like, it looks like a righteous shoot, as they say. You know, the guy was shooting at the police when he was just sitting in his car and didn't want to talk to the cops. The cops killed him. The guy shot one of the cops. The cop was mortally wounded, was in the hospital for weeks, got out. You know, his doctor said, you probably can't go back to work for a year, if ever. You know, the guy got shot. I mean, getting shot, anybody who thinks, oh, it's just a shoulder, you know, but it was really serious, several shots, and the cop was really messed up and couldn't go back to work. So a month after he gets shot, he's finally at home, and his boss, the chief of police, sends him a text message at night that says, you need to be in work tomorrow morning. You got to be back to work.
What?
Yeah. And the guy wrote him back, cop wrote him back and said, my doctors say I can't be back yet. Chief of police calls him the next day. You have to be back to work or you're going to lose your job. And the guy's like, okay, I called my doctor an hour ago. I'm waiting for him to get back. He's a busy man. Chief of police is like, I don't care. You got to be back to work tomorrow or you're done. And the cop already, like, you know, they gave him like 3 weeks paid leave. And he, like, the last week he was off, he had his vacation time for it. And like his gun was ruined in the thing. Like his gun was shot in the thing. And the chief of police said he had to replace his gun himself. And
that's brutal.
So inhuman, man, of the chief of police. And it turns out the chief of police was acting under the like the auspices of the mayor and maybe some members of the city council. And the cop's attorney wrote a letter to the chief of police, had it delivered by messenger, CC'd the local newspaper, CC'd the police union, CC'd the, you know, and it was like, it was the best lawyer letter I've ever seen. They printed it in the paper and it's like, dear chief of police, my client, so-and-so, you know, and I am his attorney in all matters concerning this shooting. And the cop was smart. He didn't use the union lawyer. He used got a private lawyer. And it's a lawyer that, like, has a reputation as being a real bulldog, which is really what you want. And he's, you know, just said, like, a month ago, you stood up and gave a press conference, dear mayor, and praised the heroic actions of my client for risking his life. So has his last month's hero become this week's financial burden? I just slayed the mayor, man. And I was laughing at the mayor. And it's a good example of how the state eats its own sometimes. But I actually was like, man, yeah, the cop's in the right. And I know that'll shock some of our listeners, but it was interesting. Yeah.
Speaking of police and
hang on, the moral of the story is, before we go on.
Yeah.
Even if you're a sociopath like most politicians are, don't eat your own and don't be public about it if you think anything about having your job next year. My prediction is this chief of police will be out next year. And if the mayor did, in fact, push him to do it, which the newspaper says, or I read in the newspaper, it might have been a comment, but you know, I think the mayor is going to be out in a year. Like, you don't get to keep your job and keep robbing people and, you know, having your feet up on the table and collecting the labor of others for long if you eat your own. So even if those people can't have compassion for this guy that was shot protecting and serving, I guess, you know, think about your self, your self preservation, you know, because you're going to end up being like, I don't know, a mayor in a small town in Maine or something. Where do you go down from Casper, Wyoming? I don't know.
We don't have mayors here.
Do you have a mayor? Do you have a goat as a mayor?
we have a selectman.
Oh, yeah, that's a legal term, I think.
Only the big cities have that. Yeah, kind of city manager.
Casper's 55,000 people, but that's a big city in Wyoming. It's tied for the second. It and Cheyenne are the big same population in the biggest towns in the state.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have antelope there? No, you don't, do you?
No, nope.
I heard a good word for antelopes.
What's
speed goats. They call them speed goats here. Because they kind of look like goats and they're like the second fastest animal or something.
I can remember driving through just like in the open plains and seeing them bouncing down.
the deer and the antelope play?
Like literally. Yeah.
They're awesome.
It was cool.
Boing, yeah. Boing, boing. Yeah. They're everywhere. I mean, they're in town here. Like, when I go in to go shopping two towns over in Casper, Wyoming, I see them, you know, in the park. Or when I go to my doctor, like, there's a cemetery across from my doctor and there'll be goats or speed goats, not being very speedy, but usually hanging out on a hill. And my wife and I call those cantilevered speed goats.
That's a great name for a band.
Cantilevered speed goats. It kind of is. So I do have one little thing I want to mention before we get into constrained writing. Was, do you know about the Great Cleveland Balloon Fest of 1986?
I have to admit, I don't.
Yeah, people should look at the video called the Doomed Cleveland Balloon Fest of 86 on YouTube. Just Google that. So there was a...
Oh, boy.
So you know how Cleveland is like the brunt of all the jokes, really? It's like, ugh.
Right.
Cleveland. You know, like, right. it's the armpit of the Great Lakes, as if most of the Great Lakes aren't the armpit of the Great Lakes. And we lived there. We grew up there. We
know. We're qualified to say that.
We were sowed and weaned there in the in the Avant Garden. I love that poem, by the way, Avant Garden. I didn't know what a frost pocket was. I didn't know what a. I learned a lot. It's educational. We should tag it as educational on iTunes.
I had to do a lot of research.
Kitchen garden. Sure, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Frost pocket. Yeah. I think the frost pocket should be the name of a poetry journal from Maine.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah. I like it when you say that. That's on the record. When I said, every bar has its berry. And you said, oh, I'm going to write that. That's on the record. I'm going to write that down.
It was good. I like that. That's one of my favorite ones, too.
Yep.
All right.
So the Great Cleveland Balloon Fest of 86. So Cleveland decided they didn't want to be the brunt of the jokes. And they wanted to do a wonderful gift to the world with tax money stolen at gunpoint. You know, if you don't pay it, they throw you in jail, threaten you with a gun. So they decided to spend a few million dollars having this festival where they basically bought up all the helium tanks in the country for a week. And helium is in short supply and it's expensive. It's hard to extract from the air. So they, you know, just got truckload upon truckload upon truckload of helium tanks. And they brought in people from around the country who were experts at inflating helium balloons quickly. You know, all the out of work clowns, all the rodeo clowns, all the clown clowns, brought them in, trained them, you know, had the mayor out there with a bullhorn barking orders. And so basically they had this like highly publicized, like the whole city is involved, whether it wants to be or not. And they're like, we're going to, you know, there was like a Guinness Book of World Records for the most balloons released. And it was, I don't know, like 10,000 or something. And they're like, we're going to get 1.1 million balloons. So they inflate 1.1 million balloons and they put them, they just like let them go and they go under this giant net so they can release them all at once. So they, you know, they spend like 7 hours blowing up all the, having hundreds of people blowing up just balloon after balloon after balloon, blowing up all these balloons. All the kids got out of school for the day to blow up balloons. Everybody blew up balloons, you know, basically forced child labor with no pay, slavery. Yeah. So the kids got to be forced to come blow up balloons. And they had all the news crews there. News crews from as far away as Buffalo and Toledo showed up. It was that big. Yeah. So they released the balloons and they're just like, it is quite a sight. I mean, it's like they did it downtown and there's, you know, a skyscraper downtown. It's like, you know, 18 stories. It's like the tallest building in Cleveland or something. And the balloons all kind of like clung to the side of it going up and obscured it. I mean, it was amazing. And even on the old, really bad, like I can't believe on old news clips, like the video's bad, but the audio's really bad. Like, really? Did it sound that bad back then? Do you remember?
I think it did.
We're here today with the balloons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it did.
Bad audio is a hate crime. So they released the balloons, and this video, the Doomed Balloon Fest of 86, is like somebody put it together after the fact, and it's like the first clip is them talking about it, the second clip is them blowing up the balloons, the third clip is the balloons being released, and then the next thing is like the next day they show, what is it, Lake Erie? What's the lake in Cleveland?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Lake Erie, like the bay of Lake Erie in front of Cleveland is nothing but balloons. You can't see the water. Like they all, the, you know, state sponsored pollution, basically. They all land in the lake.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah. And then the next news clip, the next clip is they're looking for some missing fishermen who were out fishing while this happened. They found the boat, you know, it's like a little, I don't know, 16 foot aluminum boat with a motor. They found the boat with both life preservers still in the boat. And This is not funny, but they found, you know, like the guy's fishing hat and the fishing gear and no people. And, you know, the wives had called the police. Husband didn't come home. Police go out and look. Coast Guard goes out and look. You know, they find the boat. They don't find the people. And then they're looking for the people and they're like interviewing the guy on the Coast Guard, on a Coast Guard ship looking for him. And he's like, we wouldn't see him if they're out here. There's nothing but balloons. And, you know, we're looking for a guy with an orange hat, and there's nothing but orange and yellow and red balloons out here, and they're all the size of a human head. We can't find these people. And, you know, they were found dead 3 weeks later, and they probably got distracted by the balloons just landing on them, and it was a stormy day. And so basically the city killed two people, and, you know, while they were dying in the water, made it impossible to find them. And polluted and, you know, did this because in the wisdom of the town fathers, you know, the people that are smarter than everyone else. So they get to rule us, like they did that. That happened.
Unbelievable.
I think there's a poem in this. I'm going to send you the link.
All right, cool.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be political. Just, you know, I mean, a private company could have done this, but it's just funnier to me because it's, but yeah, I'm sending this to you. All right. So I think you should write the poem in constrained speech, though. So constrained
speech. Let's do it.
Speech,
so let's talk about constrained speech.
Let's do it. Last time it was synthetic thought. This time it's constrained speech.
Right.
What is it? The poem will be called Let's Talk About Constrained. Maybe the record should be called Let's Talk About Constrained Speech. And the whole record, I'd do
we
it.
Could do that.
I'd do it.
I'd do it.
It's educational, too. Let's talk about constrained speech. And it also kind of sounds like a double entendre for like stopping people's free speech, which is happening here and there a lot, apparently. So maybe I'll write that poem, and then you can write a bunch of poems in constrained speech. So constrained speech is a type of writing that has rules other than normal rules. And there's poetic forms of it, like, for instance, a lipogram is a constrained writing or word game consisting of writing paragraphs or longer works, like books, in which a particular letter or group of letters is avoided, usually a common vowel, frequently E, the most common letter in the language. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agoristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agorist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agoristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agoristhosting.com. The central scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Hey, I saw your t-shirt from across the room. That's pretty cool.
Thanks. I looked all over for t-shirts with designs and sayings that define my unique taste, and I finally found it.
Who makes them?
Wormshirts.com.
Wormshirts.com?
Yeah, Wormshirts.com.
That's weird. Why'd they call it Wormshirts.com?
Probably because Wormshirts.com is easy to remember. Worm, like the critter that crawls on the ground, and shirts, like what they are, t-shirts.
Wormshirts.com. Cool. Do they make them for women?
Yeah, they have men's, women's, and children's styles, a bunch of colors, and all sizes, and they're quality cotton shirts.
I'll look up Wormshirts.com right now on my phone and check it out. Wow, they have lots of designs. I've never seen any shirts like these.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Hey, let's get out of here. We'll go over to my place and I'll order some shirts on Wormshirts.com. Then when they arrive, I'll try them on for you.
Worms!
That's Wormshirts.com.